Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Ritz Report. I am Alex Ritz. Today's Thursday, December 2nd. December 2nd, 2021. We're on our way, toward Christmas time. Ho, ho, ho. I hope everybody's having a wonderful week. We're on Thursday. We're over the hump. One more day through Friday, and we're into the weekend. Thanks for taking the time to join me on today's show. Today, we're talking about New York City. New York City has decided to open up some state-sponsored drug dens. I'm sure that's going to be great. As somebody who spends a lot of time in New York City, I can say that it is a valid concern of mine that state-sponsored drug dens might be a problem. We're also going to talk about the smash-and-grab looting in San Francisco. If you were here on Tuesday, we spoke a little bit about that. And, you know, they had arrested some of the perpetrators. And we were going to talk about and see how, because they said, you know, we need to have a very strong response to these looters. So we're going to take a look and see exactly how strong is that response. How's the DA there looking into that whole thing? We're going to talk about the Marines. As a former Marine, this one is close to my heart. There are some 7,000 Marines who haven't gotten the jab. What does that mean for them? We're going to talk about a pollster in the New York Times who is warning, ding, 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 Dems, we have a problem. that piece is so revealing, although many pieces today are very revealing, in the fact that, and I've said this in the past, that liberalism is a mental disorder. It truly is, because there's no way, and when I read this stuff today, you're going to see what I mean, there's no way your brain could be operating in any normal manner whatsoever, and you come to the decisions that you do when you're a liberal. No way. Just not going to happen. We're going to talk COVID, the latest VAERS numbers, what the New York Times shows, and a new little piece of information on the show. What happened this day in history? We'll pick some interesting event that occurred on December 2nd, some other year in the past, and we will review that quickly. And then, as always, some of the part of the show that people love it, the woke word of the day, and those inspiring quotes from none other than Joe Biden.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Loser.
Yes, Joe Biden. But before we get to all of that juicy goodness, let's talk about New York City and the fact that the mayor there, easily the worst mayor probably in the history of the planet, Mayor Bill de Blasio has moved ahead with his plan to open two drug injection centers in New York City. How anybody could think this is a good idea is beyond me. From the Epoch Times, New York City opened two supervised injection sites in Manhattan on Tuesday to provide illicit drug users and addicts with a so-called safe and controlled environment for substance abuse, making these the first government-sanctioned spaces for such a purpose in the United States. Mayor Bill de Blasio has been pushing for such centers since 2018 and has succeeded with the twin injection sites in East Harlem and Washington Heights just weeks before his term comes to an end. So we're going to pause there on the piece from the Epoch Times and just reflect for a moment. If you don't know New York, East Harlem and Washington Heights are in northern Manhattan. They are a predominantly minority community. Why is it he would choose, and where is Black Lives Matter? And where is the ACLU? And where is every other group who claims that they care about black and brown lives? Why aren't they standing up, having a fit about the fact that Mayor Bill de Blasio, where his real name is Warren Wilhelm, he changed it so he could get elected, but Mayor Bill de Blasio has decided in all of his whiteness to open two legally sanctioned drug dens in black and brown communities in northern Manhattan. Do people care about the black and brown community? And if they did, do they think this is a good idea? Because data from other countries that have tried this shows that, yeah, it's not really that great of an idea. Nah, not really. Not really. Continuing with the piece, de Blasio has informed the sites that law enforcement will not take action against the premises. In 2018, the plan for the facilities was rejected by Cuomo and Trump. One of the interesting things about that, right, is that he says law enforcement will not take action against these premises. In these premises, they're shooting hard drugs, heroin, right? They're doing hard drugs, methamphetamine. All of these drugs, under federal government standards are totally illegal, right? So even with marijuana, right, the states across the country that have legalized marijuana, federally, those drugs are still illegal. And it's the same issue with this. So I would say that we're probably in the courts going to see people pushing to shut these things down based on the fact that under federal law, this is totally illegal. And some mayor, some moron mayor, Bill de Blasio, decided that he was going to do this. It goes on, quote, overdose prevention centers are a safe and effective way to address the opioid crisis. I'm proud. This guy is such a pathetic loser. I am proud to show cities in this country that after decades of failure, a smarter approach is possible, de Blasio said in a statement. Just as five drug users had overdosed on opening day in the East Harlem Center. I'm sorry to laugh, but you open these drug dens and immediately you have five drug overdoses. This shouldn't be a surprise to anyone because you give them a place to shoot up. What are they going to do? They're going to shoot up. But what's interesting about this is that they say that these users can bring their own drugs to these drug dens to shoot up, but they can't get any drugs at these drug dens, right? So they need to get them elsewhere. So getting outside of the liberal brain for a second, let's sort of think it through. If I have to bring my own drugs to the drug den, where am I going to get the drugs? Oh, I'm going to get them from a drug dealer on the street. If a drug dealer knows that there are places in the city where it's legal for his clients to shoot up his drugs, where are they going to go to sell their drugs? Oh, they're going to go to those places that are close to those centers where people can use. And because these people are drug addicts and have a problem, they're addicts, and they will do anything to get the drug, what do you think will happen with crime in those areas where the drug dealers are there to sell drugs? The drug addicts need the drugs. Like, this is all so unbelievably obvious. And the small-minded Mayor Bill de Blasio and any other liberal who supports this kind of nonsense can't think it through one, two, three steps down the road to know this is a disaster in the making. Manhattan, New York City, is already a mess under his leadership, under his time serving as mayor, because he's not leading anything, right? He's no leader whatsoever. Further down in the piece, it says that there have been 1,497 confirmed overdoses in New York City in 2019. In 2020, the number rose to 2,062, and during the first 3 months of this year, it was 596. According to the city's health department. This is the greatest quarterly increase ever since the numbers have been collected in since 2000, which is, you know, great. Great. So a person dies of a drug overdose every 4 hours in New York City, which is more than the combined totals of suicides, homicides, vehicle accidents. More than 4 in 5 deaths have involved opioids, which, according to some, involve fentanyl, which had been found to be the most lethal. Go de Blasio. And then the piece ends, according to a 2020 commentary by the Heritage Foundation, people have been increasingly voting out candidates in Canadian provinces like Ontario, Alberta, and Manitoba, who support establishing drug injection facilities in their regions due to a significant increase in trash, crime, and disorder. The report stated that safe injection sites have an extremely poor record of moving drug users into treatment and recovery, with some referral rates as low as 1%. Whenever a center gets established, the surrounding neighborhood dissolves into an open-air drug market with hundreds of homeless addicts sleeping in the streets. The resulting effect is a problem that's worsened by the additional social costs added onto neighborhoods and nearby businesses, the report said. So there you have Mayor Bill de Blasio. He doesn't even have a month left in office, folks. Not even a month. Bill, just sit on your couch and get stoned. Don't do anything else. You're not helping. You're not part of the solution. You are a huge, huge part of the problem.
If I wanted a joke, I'd follow you into the John and watch you take a leak.
Yeah, because de Blasio is a joke. The man is a walking joke. I don't know anybody who's voted for him. I don't understand how anybody could support him, would still support him. It is beyond me. Moving on to California. We talk about one disaster city. Let's move on to the next. San Francisco, right? We talked about this on Tuesday where they had their smash and grab robberies. Because what big city doesn't want to have some smash and grabs, right? I mean, you got like 80 people running into these stores and just grabbing a whole ton of stuff, running out the door, and they arrest a few of them, and then they're like, you know, liberal minds. They're twisted in knots. How do we go about prosecuting these guys? You know, it's so hard. Did they really break the law? Is it society's fault? So we talked about this on Tuesday, and I said, let's just wait and see what the DA in San Francisco was going to do. So today, in the San Francisco Chronicle, the title of the piece is, Chesa Boudin, who's the DA there, is pursuing looting charges against Union Square theft suspects, but it is a legal gamble. It's a legal gamble, folks, because when you have video of all of these people looting, right, it's a legal gamble. We're not quite sure whether they actually looted. This piece reads, San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Boudin's decision last week to pursue felony looting charges for a recent wave of organized retail theft across the city is a legal gamble that may require his office to prove the crimes were the result of the coronavirus pandemic. Stop right there. Right? Stop right there. What do you mean? This is California, so you got to turn your brain off. You got to turn your brain off, maybe pour some oatmeal in your ear because that's what they have between theirs, and try to relate how the coronavirus pandemic has anything to do with the looting that's going on in San Francisco. Does it? Do you think it does? Does anybody out there really think? I mean, so apparently California passed a law or put in this regulation after the coronavirus started, right? Where if people were caught stealing things because of the pandemic, that they would be, it would be applicable to charge them as a looter, apparently. Okay, so put that, so keep that in mind and then think to yourself, okay, I could understand if somebody's looting and stealing, I don't know, milk, bread, baby formula, diapers, things that you need to survive. Okay, we are looting Louis Vuitton stores, Lululemon, right? Burberry. Do these sound like things that we need to survive? Or are these things that people are stealing because they have the highest resale value in terms of the black market, right? Sell it on the street. You get the most money for it. Part of this piece, which is truly just unbelievable. They have this person here, Nadia Bechtna, who is a assistant professor of criminal law. She says the rationale behind this criminal statute is to protect property. This is the looting law that we were just discussing, is to protect property during times where there is so much chaos going on, where individuals can take advantage of the fact that there is chaos and commit offenses that they otherwise wouldn't commit because they wouldn't be given the opportunity. Okay, that makes sense, right? So if, like I said, if you were going to take advantage of the opportunity that we had a pandemic and somebody couldn't go to work at their 7-Eleven or they couldn't go to work at their local bodega and somebody went in and stole all the milk or stole all the diapers, totally relatable, right? That makes sense. It follows through. We're talking about Louis Vuitton. We're talking about Nike. We're talking 60-inch flat screens. Okay, this is something entirely different. But further down in the piece, one of the gentlemen here, right? So one of the gentlemen here speaks about the fact that, you know, we don't believe that there's significant nexus to the state of emergency that would allow us to establish these as lootings. And this is where I say you got to get into the liberal mind, where you essentially have to turn off all reason, all rationale, all critical thinking. Does it look like looting? Right? Does it look like a duck? Does it quack like a duck? Does it walk like a duck? It's a duck. It's looting, right? It is looting. So, like I said on Tuesday, let's just see how strong these people are going to be with that slob of a mayor they have out there who was calling on the DA to really push for hard charges against these people, because it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And as evidence, as I was looking for a piece about this today in the San Francisco Chronicle, there was another piece that caught my eye where, just like I said, if you suspected that they were going to charge these people strongly, they're not going to. And here's some proof. The title of this piece is, A Woman Charged with Stealing $40,000, $40,000 in Target merchandise is being released from jail. $40,000 in Target merchandise is being released from jail. A woman charged with stealing more than $40,000 in San Francisco Target store was released from jail on an ankle monitor, becoming a test case for a city facing a rash of well-publicized retail theft while trying to lower incarceration rates. I almost don't even know how it makes your head hurt. You have to do all sorts of backflips in your logic and twist your brain into a pretzel. Lower incarceration rates. This woman is a complete and utter thief. $40,000. She's a thief. She belongs in jail, right? You're trying to lower incarceration rates. Why? She's a thief. She belongs in jail. This is pretty straightforward. In this piece, her name is Aziza Graves. She allegedly used a self-checkout kiosk. This is ballsy. I mean, I got to give this chick props for balls. Aziza Graves allegedly used self-checkout kiosks to commit 120 thefts from the Stonestown Target, scanning items and making nominal payments of a dollar, or in some cases, only a few cents, before leaving the unfinished transaction and walking out of the store. Charged with 120 misdemeanor counts of petty theft and 8 felony counts of grand theft, the 41-year-old was released from jail by San Francisco Superior Court, the judge, on November 24th, 6 days after her arraignment. 6 days. Graves would not return phone calls or text messages Tuesday for comment. As she awaits trial, Graves is a conspicuous figure in an agitated political debate that has fractured San Francisco. Should we allow theft? Should we not allow theft? Theft seems to be, you know, it is sort of a nuisance. It scares people away. Nobody wants to shop in our stores. Everything's boarded up. There's police everywhere. There are criminals. And it is hurting the economy. But should we allow it anyway? Just because we are so burdened with guilt, that we are such... we're so burdened with white guilt that we just can't prosecute these people. We just have to let them go. Take everything. Steal my house. Steal my car. It's yours. I'm so guilty. In this case, the argument is over what an effective way to deal with the prolific perpetrators of minor crime, while many parts of the community are fed up and looking for solutions from city leaders. City leaders. You mean city clowns, right? The city clown show, just like we have in New York, right? City clown show. Quote, listen to this. This is like classic, just twisted head liberalism nonsense. We could, in theory, put this woman in prison for the rest of her life, said Michael Romano, chair of California's Committee on Revision of the Penal Code and founder of Stanford University's Three Strikes and Justice Advocacy Project. Whew, that's a mouthful. He told the Chronicle, and that he's continued his quoting, and this man, how he looks at himself in the mirror and is not completely embarrassed that he wants to hide from the city of San Francisco after his name appears in print saying this. But that doesn't solve the problem from a deterrence perspective. Wait. Stop right there. Putting someone in jail doesn't solve the problem from a deterrence perspective. Actually enforcing the law doesn't solve the problem in terms of deterrence. Then why do we have the law? What's the purpose? It doesn't stop the next person from doing it. Actually, it would, right? If somebody saw somebody go in and steal a whole bunch of stuff where 8 counts of it was felony related and saw that person go to jail, and they would think, oh, I don't want to go to jail. Like, it's... I feel like I'm speaking to my 3-year-old, trying to explain like the basics of, okay, you do this, this happens. You do that, this happens. Anyway, his full quote is, but that doesn't solve the problem from a deterrence perspective. It doesn't stop the next person from doing it. It's much more expensive to incarcerate someone than to provide treatment. What treatment are you going to provide? This person's a criminal, right? Some people are just criminals. What treatment are you going to provide? Put her in jail. And if you want to provide her treatment or some sort of classes on how not to steal everything that she sees, which I'm not sure how that works, but if you want to do that, put her in jail and give her the classes in jail. Why do we have to have this or that? Can't we do both things together? Libs are always talking about how we need to be able to chew gum and walk at the same times. We can't do that here? We can't put her in jail, actually enforce the law, so all the law-abiding citizens who are paying all the taxes in the city of San Francisco can actually go to the Louis Vuitton store without having to worry about what's going to happen, whether there's going to be some mass theft, without having to walk through boarded-up stores, without having to walk through a huge police presence to go shopping? All those people that are actually paying the bills? It's unbelievable. So they quote another guy here, Van Pearson, a district attorney for El Dorado County and a past president of California's District Attorney Association, views Graves as a product of the legal system, and he says that the system is failing to hold people accountable. No, you don't say. Frankly, someone like this, she knows there's no consequence, Pearson said. He criticized Prop 47, a ballot measure approved by California voters in 2014 for setting the threshold for felony theft at $950. Why people of California would do that is beyond anybody's wildest dreams. It makes no sense. It's dumb. And now you're living, now you have voters that are like, hey, all these people are stealing. Well, yeah, you made it legal for them to steal, genius. You actually voted to give them the right to steal. Ugh, it's infuriating. It resulted in, he said, in unusual prosecutions like the one against Graves, whose charging document is extensive, but packed with minor offenses. Anyway, like I said, getting back to the original point, we talked about those folks who robbed all those stores, and the DA is going to get really tough. A woman, $40,000 in theft. They let her go. $40,000. Give her an ankle bracelet. And they have the statistics that show that the ankle bracelets, they're really not that effective. They're really not. So just mass mayhem. Mass mayhem. Just and it's going to continue, right? It's going to continue. Moving on to the Marine Corps. 7,000 Marines unvaccinated as COVID-19 vaccine mandate deadline hits. So, as a former Marine, I remember being a young man and standing there up in Albany, New York, and putting my hand up and taking that oath where I'm going to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies foreign and domestic. These Marines, a large number of them, 2,241, have applied for religious accommodations, right? How many religious accommodations have been approved? Zero. Zero. And the reason I bring up taking the oath and putting your hand up and saying, I'm going to protect the Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic, is that the Bill of Rights in that Constitution talks about Amendment 1, right? Amendment 1 to the Bill of Rights. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. If these young men and women who put in for a religious exemption, doesn't make a difference what their reasoning is, doesn't make a difference whether you agree with the fact that they're religious, don't agree with the fact that they're religious, it is completely meaningless how anybody who is reviewing what they put in for their religious exemption, what they feel about it, they have no right. These people have joined the Marine Corps and swore to defend the Constitution, and in that Constitution and the Bill of Rights is a certain statement that gives them the right to say, I don't want to take this vaccine because of my religious preferences. And they're just being told no. They're just being told flat out no. I'll tell you, folks, I don't know what's going on in this country. I don't know currently in regard to all of this COVID nonsense and these vaccine mandates and this Omicron that started last Friday, where it is literally on high-speed spin cycle all across the news, everywhere. That's all you hear about is this Omicron. We have one case that was found yesterday in California, one case, and we're shutting down the planet where everybody's in free fall panic mode. The unbelievably moron governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, suspends all elective surgery because of one case in California. One case? But these 7,000 Marines who have decided that they don't want to get the COVID vaccine, what's going to happen to them now? Right? Nobody forced them to join the Marine Corps. They wanted to serve their country, same as me. Same as me. Right? At the time, my dad had been in the Army. My brother had been in the Marine Corps. I was a young man. I didn't know. I had gone to college, and I was like, you know what? I'm not ready for college yet. I think I need to do something else. I'd like to serve my country. I remember growing up looking at all my dad's uniforms and all of his stuff that he had when I was a kid, and I decided to do it. But when you take that oath, I mean, that taking that oath is an agreement, right? Between the person who's taking it, saying, okay, I'm putting my life in your hands in some way, and I expect that respect back from you. Because you are, right? You're putting your life into their hands in terms of, like, if there's a decision to go to war or whatever the case may be, you are making the agreement to say, I will do that. But in return, I mean, there has to be a level of respect. And to say that I don't have the right to say that I don't want to take a vaccine because of my religious beliefs, and the Marine Corps to say no. All of these, all of the lines of the military. And then they quote the Commandant of the Marine Corps here, General David Berger. I have great appreciation for all of those who made these vaccinations possible, including the civilian Navy medical personnel who worked tirelessly over the past months to protect our Marines and families. Are they really protecting the Marines and families? These are young men and women in the prime of their life who are in good shape. I would argue you're not protecting them. I would argue that you're putting them at more risk by giving them an experimental gene therapy that still is not FDA approved, that's under emergency use authorization. There's the blinders that are on people, just complete blinders, where the only thing they see is we need everyone vaccinated. And if we look at that, look at countries around the world that are 100% vaccinated, over 100% vaccinated, COVID's not going away. The vaccination is not the answer to COVID. It's not going away. Moving on. Let's talk about this pollster's warning from the New York Times, where he's saying to Democrats, we have a problem. And you read this piece and you think to yourself, just like with the pieces from California where you listen to these people talk, the leftists, and you think to yourself, they're on a different planet. They're on a different planet. They really are. So the interview here, the gentleman's name is Mr. Stryker, who was interviewed by the Times, and he was asked the following questions thusly. What's the first thing that you and your partners, you told your partners after you got done with these groups that you were interviewing? What was your biggest takeaway? Listen to this. I was surprised by how dominant education was in this election. Like, has this guy been living under a rock? This person is supposed to be a Democratic pollster? And he didn't understand that education was the issue in the election and CRT? Who would pay this person any amount of money to do anything? He continues, I was also struck by how much it was this place for all of these frustrations and these suburban voters, where they could take out their COVID frustrations in one place. It's not COVID frustrations, Mr. Stryker. It's not. It's a matter of you being able to teach our kids reading, writing, and arithmetic. That's what we want you to teach them. We don't want you to teach them because of this color of their skin. They are an oppressor or the oppressed. We don't want you giving them badges saying, what gender do you identify with today? Right? We want math, reading, writing, some history. History would be nice. Actual history. The piece continues. Next question. So if you're advising a Democrat client running in 2022, what do you tell them? I would tell them we have a problem. We've got a national branding problem that's probably deeper than a lot of people suspect. Our party thinks maybe some things that we're saying aren't cutting through, but I think it's much deeper than that. They continue, what is the branding problem in a nutshell? People think that we're more focused on social issues than the economy. What do you mean they think that you're more focused on social issues? All you guys talk about is social issues. The economy is in the toilet because of everything that Joe Biden and his band of idiots is doing. And the clowns on Capitol Hill. You had the White House Chief of Staff yesterday, Ron Klain, yesterday, talk about how lockdowns are the best thing for economic growth. Like, what? Again, what planet is this person on? What planet? That got to be the dumbest thing that I heard somebody to say. I mean, listen, there are a lot of dumb things that people say. We have Hochul, who's a moron, says a lot of stupid things. De Blasio, moron, a lot of stupid things. You got Rochelle Walensky out of the CDC, total deer in the headlights idiot, right? These people are morons. Just because you have a bunch of letters, and we talked about this, a bunch of letters after your name does not mean that you're bright. And that is really clearly evident with what we have going on right now. Clearly evident. The piece continues. Next question. How do Democrats balance a commitment to core constituents while at the same time addressing economic issues that voters are confronted with every day? So he responds, the number one issue right now for women is the economy. The number one issue for black voters is the economy. The number one issue for Latino voters is the economy. I'm not advocating for us ignoring social issues, but when we think broadly about our voters, they actually want us to be talking about the economy and doing things to help them economically. And what are they doing? What is the next genius plan? That Biden and all of his band of merry fools, what are they doing? Well, A, you have them skirting around the idea of lockdowns. B, you have them skirting around the idea of, oh, well, it used to be only two shots to be fully vaccinated, and we're thinking of making it three. Folks, it's going to be three, okay? So whoever out there is right now vaccinated and you're giving people a hard time because you think you're it, I'm vaccinated, it's going to be fun to watch in New York City how suddenly everybody goes from fully vaxxed to unvaxxed. And how many of those people, lib or not, want to get a booster. And not only a booster, right? Now we're hearing it's going to be every 6 months, the J&J, they want you to get the booster after 2 months. 2 months. What is that, like a vitamin D injection? I mean, come on. They're not focused on the economy. They're going to continue to do things to destroy the economy, continue to do things to raise inflation, to increase the price of gas, increase the price of food across the board. So 2022, 2024, I think 2022 is sort of a fait accompli at this point. It's going to be an absolute bloodbath for the Democrats. Bloodbath. They don't have a prayer, right? Unless somebody gets a clue. But based on what Ron Klain is is saying, and apparently he's the genius in the White House who's got Biden's ear, they're not gonna pivot, quote unquote. And that, my friends, brings us to the woke word of the day. Hi, this is your resident beta male here at the Ritz Report. I like that sound. Today's woke word of the day is internalized oppression. Internalized oppression. It's defined as when a woman makes a sandwich for her husband. yes, the woke word of the day. That's it for today. Internalized oppression. Until next time, your beta male out. Yes, folks, yes, the beta male has stepped away, and I am back. And now we are going to hear from the leader of our country, the man who's got all the balls in the air, the man who's in charge of everything. He's sharp as a tack, and we're going to listen to some of the very insightful and thoughtful things that he says.
Hero of the stupid.
Yes, here we go. Hero of the stupid.
We cannot let this, right. We've never allowed any crisis from the Civil War straight through to the pandemic of 17, all the way around 16. We have never let our democracy take second fiddle.
Yep.
We can both have a democracy and elections and at the same time correct the public health.
Right.
We choose truth over facts.
We got to... It's just, yeah. But you gotta, I mean, we gotta reassure, look, my message to everybody I talk to is
we have to take care of the cure. That will make the problem worse no matter what.
And by the way, it costs a lot of money. It cost about $740 billion over 10 years.
Come on, man.
President of the United States, everybody, don't worry. He's the man in charge. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here. He has it covered. Thanks for joining me today on the Ritz Report. I am Alex Ritz. It is December 2nd, 2021. Please, if you like this podcast, share it with your friends, family, everybody who doesn't have a clue, has a clue, whatever you prefer. And if you like what you hear, please feel free to give it a 5-star review. We'll be back on Tuesday. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Check me out on the socials at Ritz Report or email me notes of adoration and love or pure hatred at ritz@ritzreport.com. ritz@ritzreport.com. And until next time, let's go, Brandon.